Good afternoon. I'm Dr. Marcy Sachs-Braithwaite, your host for today's podcast. I have had the privilege of working in the healthcare system for the past 43 years, and I currently serve as Associate VP Executive Search Services with the MedFog Group. Today, I have the pleasure of interviewing Dr. Cassandra Gardner from Becton Dickinson. Cassandra likes to go by Casey, so we're going to call her Casey. She currently is the Associate Director of Medical Affairs for BD Canada. Through evidence generation and physician education, Casey works closely with key Canadian opinion leaders to advance the Canadian healthcare practice at BD. She has a robust background in medical research, and she's committed to bridging the gap between innovative medical research and innovative medical solutions and clinical practice. Casey is passionate about addressing health inequities, including women's health. She is focused on exploring alternative breast pathways in Canada, offering women more options and autonomy in their own care. Today, we're going to talk about reimagining breast care and some cost-effective innovations for the Canadian healthcare system. So please welcome Dr. Cassandra Gardner today to our podcast. Thank you, Casey.
Thanks for having me.
So Casey, I read your article. It's very informative, and I'm sure our readers are going to enjoy it because it's coming out in Healthcare Management Forum. But for our readers' benefit, can you tell me what is VAB and what is VAE?
Yeah, so the paper really focuses on those two technologies for an alternative breast care pathway in the Canadian healthcare setting. So VAB stands for vacuum-assisted biopsy. And the goal of biopsy, as many people know, is to sort of obtain a tissue sample for accurate breast diagnosis to see if pathologically there is cancer there. Most commonly and historically, a needle called core needle biopsy has been used for diagnosis. The process involves insertion of this core needle multiple times for adequate sampling. It's slightly uncomfortable for those of you who have unfortunately gone through that process, and it can lead to underestimating or undersampling the lesion. So vacuum-assisted biopsy is the same concept, but it uses vacuum suction and a cutting needle, which produces more of a contingent sample. So it's larger samples, and the needle is only certain to inserted a single time. So it sort of rotates in place and takes samples around where it is inserted rather than having to go in and out multiple times. So it's much better, or more comfortable for the patient. And it's a larger sample because that suction allows you to obtain a larger sample for diagnosis. So there's less probability of having a repeat biopsy because of indeterminate findings or higher sort of, it has higher specificity. So it's better for diagnostic purposes. So that's sort of one technology that we're going to talk about in this paper. The other uses that same technology, but it's called VAE, and it's vacuum-assisted excision. And in that scenario, it's really meant to be a therapeutic treatment. So it can be used to confirm a diagnosis if it's not definitively known, or it can be a way to avoid surgery for something like a surgical diagnostic excision where you're sort of confirming non-cancerous lesions and something that is usually flagged as a high-risk lesion in the initial biopsy.
Perfect. Thank you. That's really helpful. So how would you say VAE compares to that traditional surgical diagnostic excision in terms of its clinical outcomes, its cost effectiveness, and for the patient, what's their experience like with VAE compared to the way we used to do things?
Yeah. And this is one of these technologies that gets me really excited because VAE is actually really common practice in many European countries, especially in the UK, as a way to alleviate their surgical OR space and sort of take a more minimally invasive approach to cancer diagnosis and treatment. So if you think of if a patient historically would have had to go through surgery for a definitive diagnosis, where in surgery, you're having a preoperative appointment where you're probably taking some time off to go to that. You're having a surgical consult with the surgeon as well to understand the risks and benefits and what sort of your probability is in different scenarios. And then you're going in, you're under a general anesthetic. you usually have to take, after the procedure, take anywhere from half a week to a full week off from surgery. So it is a fairly significant ordeal, all for something that you may have been flagged as a high risk for cancer, but not necessarily cancer. So on the flip side, vacuum-assisted excision is a much smaller, minimally invasive device that you avoid surgery altogether. It can be done in the same place where you would have done your diagnostic biopsy, so a radiologist could do it. It's very minimally invasive, like I said, much lower risk of complications, very short recovery time. The procedure itself is an hour at most. And then just in terms of the actual incision, you'll have improved cosmetic outcomes and less pain for the patient because it's definitely much smaller of an incision.
Great. Thank you so much for that. That's really helpful. And I think it'll be a much better non-surgical technique for patients, and they will appreciate all your efforts. So how does this change in the care pathway align with the decrease in breast screening age? And how will the diagnostic backlogs be addressed?
Yeah, I think that's a great question and something that the Canadian healthcare system still has to kind of figure out as more of the provinces are reducing their screening starting age to 40 from previously 50. There's lots of evidence that has shown that lowering that age can improve health outcomes because you're able to catch cancer earlier. We've also seen a shift in terms of younger patients are getting cancer earlier and more aggressive cancer earlier. So I think in my head, I always think of it, it's a very opportune time to have these conversations as we're reimagining these breast care pathways and what this sort of burden is going to look like to the healthcare system to accommodate this. And there's more upfront costs, but you're saving significant downstream costs because you're catching cancer earlier. So the less sort of aggressive treatments is obviously the goal. And I think VAE lends itself really nicely to lowering the screening age because hopefully you're catching cancers or potential cancers when they're, or any lesion on your breast where it's smaller, and which vacuum assisted technology obviously has a size maximum sort of accommodation that it can allow for. So they're smaller lesions that can be removed by vacuum assisted excision. So yeah, I think there is going to have to be sort of a redistribution of resources to reallocate things that were previously addressed by surgery to more of a radiology standpoint. And because radiologists are so taxed right now, just in terms of the amount that they deal with from a backlog perspective for routine screening, there is going to have to be sort of a realignment of resources to accommodate.
Well, that's a great segue to my next question, which is VAE is definitely going to impact the workload for the radiologist, the surgeon, and the pathologist in the healthcare system. Do you see that as advantageous? And can you just expand a little bit more on how you were speaking about it in the last question I had?
Yeah. So from a radiologist perspective, there would be an added, I don't want to say like an added component where they're now dealing with more lesions where they probably wouldn't have been. From a surgery perspective, though, there is significant cost savings, and they have been reported. In this paper, we do a specific analysis on the cost savings to Canada, but there's been numerous other reports of elsewhere, mainly in Europe, where they've demonstrated the economic and clinical impact. But if you sort of take, before we kind of dive into the numbers, a kind of walk through the patient journey. So again, if a patient, most commonly this technology is used in something that's called a high-risk lesion. So they think it could be breast cancer, but they're still trying to find a definitive diagnosis, or there's just a high likelihood that it could become cancer in the future, or a higher likelihood, I should say. So these patients would go to a surgical consultation. They sort of inaccurately, even just by that idea of going to see a surgeon, they believe they need surgery, which is most often not the case for these types of lesions. And then because they're sort of low risk compared to patients that have had or have been diagnosed with having cancer, they're usually put to the back of the wait time to see a surgeon. So they wait a long time to see a surgeon. And then they go in and the surgeon kind of has to spend more time with them because it's more of a gray area in terms of what they're going to do for treatment, because it's not cancer, but it could become cancer, that type of thought process. So there's less defined treatment pathways. So a surgeon will spend a fair amount of time on these patients, and that's sort of disproportionate to their risk profile for it becoming cancer. And so if you alleviate that sort of whole pathway where the surgeon no longer has to see those patients and they're just immediately removed by a radiologist, the amount of time and resources that a surgeon is now able to then spend on patients who have cancer and in terms of treatment or consultation is exponentially greater. So on average, our analysis showed that by avoiding surgical diagnostic excision, that our economy basically saved $2,200 Canadian dollars per procedure. So that equates to about And it depends a little bit on kind of the prevalence of these lesions, but it can be anywhere from $1.6 to over $11 million annually in Canada. And similar sort of economic analysis who have started doing vacuum excision for some time now in Europe have seen very similar economic benefits there.
Wow, that's impressive. And just think of how much time the surgeon then has for the patients that he or she does need to see too. So this is really innovative and creative. Thank you. So what lessons can the Canadian healthcare leaders learn from the UK and other countries that have successfully integrated VAE into their breast care pathways?
Yeah, I think that's a great question and something that definitely needs healthcare leaders to sort of champion and help shepherd through these innovative technology. Historically, Canada is not always great at adopting new technology. I find especially ones that require sort of multi-stakeholder engagement. If it's not like every entity, everything is very siloed in terms of budgeting. And if you're shifting between different resources or different departments, it definitely takes strong healthcare leaders that have a strong vision of what they want to accomplish and kind of perspective on the overarching benefit, not only to their system, but ultimately to the patient as well in this state. So in our paper, we outline a nice sort of phased approach to potential barriers that you're going to reach as you implement something like this in your hospital or facility. So we sort of start with an assessment plan where there's a multidisciplinary stakeholder engagement strategy. Because again, this is really going to affect pathologists, radiologists, and surgeons, and even all the way down to referring family physicians. Like, they should be aware that there are other options other than just surgical diagnostic excision. To kind of, I think it helps alleviate also resources for them referring to surgeons if they sort of weren't picked up in screening, but also just for awareness and patient sort of ease of mind. But so you'd start really with that assessment phase, try to quantify the economic and clinical benefit, kind of do a current state assessment, and then work with a multidisciplinary group to really design new sort of workflows and algorithms that are going to work for your patient population and your staff in that very, again, interdisciplinary team approach. And then sort of develop an evaluation plan of how are you going to, if you're going to make this change, how often are you going to check on it? How are you going to see that it's working? Sort of a regular feedback cycle so you can assess how things are going. And then start small and obviously scale big, which I think is, or scale thereafter, which is good for any kind of changes in the healthcare system. I think the key barriers, again, are that the professionals are really siloed. Resource allocation is, again, very siloed. But also, if we keep sort of thinking in the perspective of evidence-based value medicine, this is a really holistic approach to that in terms of really offering benefits, not only clinically to the patient, but from a quality of life perspective and then economically as well to the healthcare system. Currently in Canada, there's no reimbursement codes for vacuum-assisted excision, which means the physicians in Canada that do offer it to their patients do out of pocket, or basically like they're covering it under a hospital budget or something, not specifically getting reimbursed for that procedure because it doesn't exist in Canada. So there will be a need for reimbursement realignment with sort of this new technology and new approach.
Right. So reallocation of dedicated resources to a different area. Always the challenge. So that leads me to my next question. What are the main barriers to adopting VAE in Canada? Because it sounds so like such a great idea. So why would we not want to try this in Canada? And how are we going to help our healthcare leaders who do, and resonated with me where you said sometimes we practice in silos. How are we going to help healthcare leaders see the benefit and the return on investment and help them overcome some of the challenges?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And to your point, the professional silos, I think, have limited this conversation from happening. I think now that it's starting to happen and there's a little bit more awareness, the conversations that I've heard or been involved in between radiologists and surgeons and even pathologists, all of them agree that this makes the most sense for their patients. I think especially surgeons, you know, sometimes in different healthcare dynamics, people want to retain, or different professions want to retain a patient population because it is a source of income to them. I have not seen that dynamic at all in this setting. Like, surgeons don't want to see these patients. They don't want to operate on patients that could have an alternative approach, especially if it's not cancer. Like, they want to do no harm. So I have been pleasantly surprised by all the conversations that I have been in, the optimistic approach that people want to find a way to move through this. So I think the delays have really been just around figuring out how it's going to work. There is a lot of different sort of stakeholders that need to get on board. And then reimbursement is, I think, a limiting factor in this. BC Cancer is currently offering VAE to some of their patients, and they're able to do that because they have a little bit of a different fee structure right now. So they're able to sort of accommodate the lack of reimbursement for VAE. But ultimately, reimbursement will really help drive these types of technology forward.
That's really great. That leads me to my next thought of a question is, what role does reimbursement and policy change play in this successful integration? And are there certain specific recommendations you would want our audience to know of?
Yeah. So I think there's two different uses. Again, we talked at the beginning of the podcast about VAB and VAE. So currently, physicians, and obviously this is going to vary across province to province, the specific reimbursement structure, but radiologists are reimbursed for a diagnostic biopsy. It is meant to, or sort of initially was developed, that fee structure to accommodate a core needle, which is slightly lower price than a vacuum-assisted technology. So again, when physicians are using the vacuum-assisted technology, which they often do, it's really common if they're doing an MRI-guided image or if it's a heavily calcified lesion. But they're doing it essentially at a loss in most cases. Like, again, they're using money from their hospital budget because the current procedural codes don't accommodate for that new sort of innovative technology. And then on the flip side, the VAE technology, for an actual therapeutic application, there's no code at all. So there has to be a readjustment of those fee codes to allow this to take place so that physicians can ultimately deliver it without at a loss all the time.
Correct. That's helpful. So my last question for you is, how can the interprofessional team be engaged and collaborate to foster and support adoption of VAE in the Canadian healthcare system? Like, this is really going to involve a lot of different healthcare professionals. It's not just physicians. How do you see that engagement and collaboration happening to support VAE?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I think I'm a big advocate of, like, start small and build bigger. I think a lot of these, like, radiologists, pathologists, and surgeons are meeting on a regular cadence, and whether it's called like a tumor board, they're essentially sort of touching base on patients that also touch different interdisciplinary specialties. And they talk about these patients. And I think the initial sort of conversation can naturally happen at those types of meetings where you're discussing different patients and it's like, oh, could VAE be an option for this patient to avoid surgery? And I think as you start having those conversations, it facilitates a larger conversation of, now can we develop algorithms that make sense where we're naturally not having to talk about each individual patient, but we know now that this type of patient would be well suited for this care pathway. We've seen in the UK, so when they originally switched over or started doing more VAE, VAB procedures, it was similarly sort of a multidisciplinary team that got together, and it was led by the National Health Service, a breast screening program. And their aim was really just to reduce overtreatment of benign surgical biopsies. And they really wanted to maximize preoperative diagnosis of cancer. So they had a sort of a working group together that decided these were the types of lesions that everybody felt comfortable with. And they started small. Initially, they had kind of not the detriment of the economic benefit, but they had patients going to the surgeon. The surgeon said, yes, they sort of referred back for a VAE. And so they still had the surgical consult, but then they went back for VAE, so they didn't have the surgery procedure. And then eventually the surgeon said, you know, we don't have to see these patients. We're comfortable with you just seeing them. So then they eliminated a step. And then they sort of added in different additional lesions that the surgeons felt comfortable over time, also not treating by surgical diagnostic excision. And then sort of more patients flowed back to radiology or just stayed within radiology. So I think that gradual shift in time can definitely help. I think the benefit Canada has is, like I said, like, Europe has been doing this for some time. These initial, that multidisciplinary group that I talked about was like in the early 2000s. So they have a well-established system, and we can kind of leverage some of the knowledge that they've already gained from them to hopefully fast track our implementation in Canada.
Wow, that's great. Well, Casey, this has been extremely informative, but knowing how much knowledge you have, I just want to ask you, is there anything else you'd like our readers to know? Because I'm not sure I've covered everything, because I think as I listen to you, I look forward to reading the article in Healthcare Management Forum. But this is like a real eye-opening experience for women in healthcare to understand. And for our patients, it's certainly going to give them more autonomy. And I think also choice in their care paths. So what else is there that I haven't asked you that you think we should know?
Now, I was actually going to say just the same thing that you just mentioned. I think this adds another choice for patients in their diagnostic or therapeutic journey for breast cancer. I hear these a lot in terms of randomized control studies in this care setting. Females really want to have a say in how they want to be treated. And I've seen studies where they'll try to enroll in an RCT, a randomized control trial, which means like the patient won't get a say in what sort of therapeutic option they get. And their enrollment just stalls. Like, patients don't want to be enrolled in that because they want a say in it. And when they do offer patients that say in the trial, they end up getting patients in both arms of the trial. Like, patients, it's not like one is better and one is not. They want just the option to inform their own healthcare decisions. And I think VAE really allows that patients another option in, you know, some patients might be like, I don't want surgery and I don't want it removed via VAE. I want just imaging at a regular cadence just to see if it's getting bigger. And that's most appropriate for me. And other patients might be like, no, I want this, you know, what you found on the imaging to be out of my body. And I want VAE, and like, let's remove it right away. So I think it just allows another modality for patients and women to really champion their own health.
That's great. As a firm supporter of having autonomy in healthcare, I really love the work you've done. And I want to thank you and your team for highlighting for us a new way to reimagine breast care in Canada. And I think that this is really innovative. It's creative. And like we said, it gives women more choice and autonomy in their healthcare decision making. So thank you, Casey and team, for all the work you did. I know your article will be published, I believe, this fall, and I'm sure our readers will really appreciate all the knowledge that you've shed light on for us today, and it will all be validated for our audience in your new article. So thank you very much for your time, and it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, Marcy. Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you to our audience. Take care.